Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. Another show here. We're show number 24 with Caleb Bacon. And we've got Rob Greenlee on the bottom square this morning. Rob, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Todd. It's great to be back after a week off. And it looks like you had a great show last week with some great podcaster guests.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had, we had PodMedicon, Jamie Davis, and the Gadget Professor. And we talked about the upcoming, well, basically how to cover a trade show as a content creator. And I got a couple of things I want to talk about that today. But I hope you had a great week off as well. But I know that you've got a great guest for us today. And I want to introduce Caleb Bacon from CalebBacon.com or on Twitter, Caleb Eats Bacon. You must love bacon there, Caleb.
I do. It just so happens that other people do as well. So that means people like me more than they should, which I prefer.
Well, my wife tries to limit my bacon intake, but as you can see, she's not having a lot of success. Well, I tell you, I know that Rob, basically, I knew you wanted to have Caleb on to talk about what happened in L.A. last week, and we'll talk about that more in a few minutes. But Rob, I know that I saw something on Facebook that you're getting vegetables out of your aquaponic garden, or however you pronounce it.
Yep. Yeah, it's an aquaponics growing system in my backyard. Yeah.
So veggies and all kinds of stuff. What have you got coming out of that thing?
all sorts of greens and things like that. It's just a massive experiment for me. So it's just playing around with chemistry and plants and fish and stuff like that. So that I'm planning on adding some tech to this thing. So as far as monitoring the levels of chemicals and temperature and solar radiation and you know, humidity and, you know, all these things to be able to really create a perfect kind of growing environment is what I'm trying to do.
So can you do that in the winter too?
I fully intend on growing the same kind of produce mostly year round. So yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Well, I just wanted to mention it because I saw your Facebook post with the picture, and I thought it was pretty cool. Hey, just so the audience, just to remind the audience, we are just a few days away from closing out nominations at the Podcast Awards, podcastawards.com. The nominations close, I think, at 23:59 or something weird like that on the 15th. So you got
there. It is.
You got basically 3 days left to get the nominations in, and because we do have a lot of podcasters that are listening to this specific show, we are still looking for sponsors for the event. Hope that you'll come in and become a podcast sponsor. We're a couple thousand dollars short at this point in being able to have enough money to raise for the trophies and so forth. But we are making progress, and I think we may close a corporate sponsor next week. And if we do, that will get us to our goal line of where we need to be. But traffic's been heavy over on the website. And but what's kind of funny is I can't switch for my life. And further, Tuesday morning, the traffic will go, da-dun. And then it'll be 10 days or 15 days before we announce the slate and then the voting process. So just a reminder there. Well, Rob, we missed the thing in L.A. So I guess
I know we did. I know exactly. So I wanted to hear exactly, you know, what the feeling was and the vibe and what Caleb thinks of this event and whether or not we should be having these types of events all over the country to promote podcasting or not.
For those that don't know, I'd like him to explain exactly what they did too, so we can get a feel.
Yeah, that's great.
So last week in the lovely Le Meridian Hotel in Santa Monica, California, right by the ocean here in Los Angeles, was the second annual Los Angeles Podcast Festival. And so it's pretty much primarily a comedy festival. And they started last year. I didn't go last year, but it was put on by the people behind the show's Comedy Film Nerds, who are Graham Elwood and Chris Mancini, and then also Walking the Room, Dave Anthony and Greg Barron. And so last year they had 24 live shows over 3 days in a variety of ballrooms in this actually really nice hotel. This hotel is like nicer than it needs to be for a podcasting convention. Like, you could put like a podcasting convention in like the airport at Hilton, and like, I'm sure nobody would complain. But it just so happened that it was at a nice hotel four blocks from the beach, which is definitely got to be great for out-of-town people. And my show, Man School, was one of the 40 live shows that went down this year. And it was a lot of fun. You guys got to come on out.
So you basically just set up in a hotel, get your gear and your rig set up, and you just do a live show. It's not like you're having sessions. It's purely doing the raw show that you normally would record back in your studio, correct?
Well, for me, it was a little bit different. But basically, the idea behind the podcast festival is the guys behind it wanted to make it as fun of an experience for people who love podcasts as possible. So there were panels throughout the days. So if you want, like, I know there was one on monetizing your podcast. You know, so if you wanted to go for an hour, you could hear that. They also had a room sponsored by Squarespace called the Squarespace Lab, where if you were a podcaster and you were not invited to be part of the show, what you could do was schedule some time in this room, and then you could set up an interview, and then you would have like a space to bring your own gear and do your own recording. And in addition to that, there were a bunch of main rooms where there were just regular podcasts going on. And so they did a great job. They had lots of audio people, video people. And so basically for me doing my show, I did something a little bit different because my show is normally just a one-on-one interview show. And I wanted to do something that was a little bit more lively and a little bit funnier. So I had a guest co-host, and then I had a couple guests over 90 minutes. And pretty much they did such a good job with the tech. You know, I walked in, I sat down, I walked out. They handed me a flash drive with my audio file on it, and that was it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So how was the attendance? Did you have more podcasters and listeners, or did you have, you know, where was the mix?
I don't know. And I think that's because so many people who love podcasting somehow find some kind of involvement, whether it's peripherally or very actively. And so while there were 40 shows, you know, I'd walk by the Squarespace Lab and I would see like people recording stuff the whole time. So there were definitely other podcasters there. And then I met some people who introduced themselves to me, who are from different podcasts. And so there were a lot of podcasters there in different forms. And what was also nice was that a lot of people who had shows or who were guests on shows just kind of hung out all weekend. So some of the more in-demand people were guests on multiple shows or, you know, just kind of like hang out with the fans. And I feel like a lot of the listeners must have like became friends with each other, because like what a cool experience,
right,
to take something so isolating, which is listening to something in your headphones or in your car or, you know, in your stereo where you don't sit around. I mean, maybe you guys bring the whole family out and listen to a podcast around the fireplace together.
No.
I thought it's a good idea. But so just to bring all these like individuals together and to like hang out for the weekend, I think that must have been a special experience for a lot of people.
I think it's cool is when you can, you know, what's weird, what the weird thing for me is, and really isn't anymore, it's not weird anymore, is I travel a lot, and I'll be in an airport and someone will just come up and grab me and say, "Hey, I listened to your show. Thanks. And I don't want to hold you." You know, it's like this, it's this kind of this subreal experience because they know you, but you don't know them. So events like this allow you to also know your audience as well. You get to meet them and, establish a relationship and you know, follow on shows. You know, what's cool about that is you can give them shout outs. And so I think the event is pretty cool. And LA's big enough that you guys can and probably pull the numbers you need. I just wonder, Rob, you know, you said you wondered if this would be an event we'd want to have somewhere else. I know here in Honolulu, I think there's maybe a half dozen of us now that are still podcasting on a regular basis. I don't know if we'd have the base here to pull in enough folks to do it. We might be surprised, you know, but I don't know. It's what is the groundswell you need to do one of these things?
Well, one of the thing here that I wanted to talk about as far as in relation to this type of thing is I did notice that you know, a lot of the folks that went to this are local to Los Angeles and stuff, but there were folks that came in from other parts of the country to participate in this. I mean, like Rob Walsh was there, and you know, he was trying to participate in a representative from SoundCloud, and but some of those folks are fairly local to the Southern California area. San Francisco, so it's not a big traveling trip, but one thing that really stood out to me is a lot of the people that are heavily into podcasting basically went to this event and participated in this event, but we're not seeing those same people participate in the New Media Expo, which is supposedly the central event for the industry. And I'm just wondering if there's some way to do a better job in the industry to kind of combine these people a little bit more than what's happening. I kind of feel like there's a little bit of a divide happening between folks that go to the New Media Expo and then the whole comedy side of podcasting, which tends to have its own world, its own separate world.
I don't know where the disconnect is there. Maybe, Caleb, maybe you can, any discussion on that you guys heard there, or is any talk of people going out to Vegas in January?
You know, I didn't really hear much of that talk, but I think people were just talking about kind of people were just being in the moment. Maybe it's a Zen Los Angeles thing, but everyone was just kind of very much enjoying this this kind of weird event. I know last year they had 700 people. I don't know what the numbers were this year, but I would guess it was more. And it was you know, I think when you're in Los Angeles, there are so many entertainers in Los Angeles that it's just easier to get guests for shows. Right. So for an event like this, you know, you don't have to fly out as much talent. You don't have to fly out, you know, all your sound people and stuff, whatever, because you already have people who already do that in town. So that's got to make it super economical. But just in terms of like the fans, it's such an entertaining experience because you have all these big name podcasters from comedy, or even like How Stuff Works was there. And I know that's a super popular show. And it's like, and I know that like Night Vale Radio was there. And I think they're from New York. And there was even like a show from Australia that came out for the event. But with just a pure like bang for your buck, you can have all these shows that are already produced in Los Angeles, and then all these great guests to be on the shows from Los Angeles. My guest co-host for my live man school was Jason Smith from the NFL Network, who hosts a TV show, Fantasy Live, as well as the companion podcast for that. And, you know, like that was something where he lived right down the street. So, you know, that made it a lot easier. And I think that's certainly a huge advantage for Los Angeles.
I know one thing too, is that the, 700 people to, and if it's, you know, and I'd love to know what the mix is at some point, but 700 is a great number, you know, for an event like that. And to be honest with you, I had not even heard about it up until maybe 10 days before the event. I'd known it happened last year, but you know, I think it's really, you said a few people, you know, a few shows came from outside of L.A., but, you know, what do you know how many was it mostly LA podcasters that were there, or do you have any idea how many came from out of town?
Out of the 40 live shows, which were officially done at the festival, I know that some of them were from out of town, but it was definitely like a comedy and entertainment based podcast event. Gotcha. And, you know, those shows seem to be primarily out of LA.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense.
Yeah, I'd say it was probably like 90%+ of a local, more local podcast to California would be the most accurate number, I think. But I don't think there's any reason why a show like this couldn't be dropped into other markets. And I do believe that there are other podcast festivals around the country. I think there's one back in New York. And I think there's also one, I think, in there's one other city that I've heard of that's actually trying to hold these as well. And I think it's like Chicago or someplace like that. But yeah, I was actually thinking about trying to pull one together here in the Seattle market too, and see what, because there's podcasters that are broadcasting and doing shows from the Seattle market too. But if you could invite some shows from LA and some other parts of the country to fly in and kind of be, you know, some draw to the event, I think it could be a you know, an event that has legs. I mean, I've seen, you know, a lot of these podcasters travel the country right now and do live events right now. So it's just a matter of getting on their calendars and trying to spread the word and try and promote podcasting offline as well as online.
Yeah, and I do think that the entertainment/comedy mix definitely adds to the pull too. And they're not going to come listen to me do a tech show. You know, that's not going to happen. You know, that's you know, if you know to be completely honest. So there has to be value for the folks that are coming too, and it's entertainment and seeing celebrities and that type of stuff is always a you know, is always a good pull. Or the chance of seeing a major celebrity is a big pull as well. Very, very cool.
Though, Todd, I don't think it needs to be a major celebrity to be a draw. I just think it needs to be a show that's popular and that the people and the fans of the show are passionate about the show and want to see that show produced in person and possibly meet the hosts and those kind of things. So I think it doesn't have to be a major celebrity, but I think it needs to be a show that has an audience, right?
Yeah.
Well, one observation I'll share with you guys is that a lot of the bigger shows that were at the Los Angeles Podcast Festival were shows which already have recorded live shows, whether it's in Los Angeles or other places. So I think you already have a certain percentage of an audience who recognizes that, oh, this is a show that is live and they do a good job. And so we kind of know what we're going to get for the live experience. Whereas maybe it was like a little bit riskier for my show, Man School, because I've never done a live Man School. I mean, I've been on other live podcasts, but like, you know, so people don't know what the format would be like live or how it would translate live. And I think there's a lot of shows that just have not done shows before audiences. And it's a whole different beast. And so when you, I think it's got to help when people know what they're getting into.
So would you say that it was a positive experience for you, or was it too frightening for you to do again?
Oh no, it was very positive. It was definitely a challenge in terms of figuring out how to make my format translate to a live festive event. Well, I think I did a good job with it.
And I understand the live part. The live part can be daunting. You know, you have no recourse. It is what it is. You know, we've been doing, you know, I've been doing this show and my other show live for quite a while, and you know, you definitely have a different approach to it when you're live, because there's, you know, there's no editing, and it's kind of hard to edit a comedy show too, to a certain extent, because the personalities are, you know, what you're looking to really get into the atmosphere of, you know, what you're trying to convey. So I that would be a whole separate topic on if comedy podcasters edit or if they don't. But so when the so was it a 24 hour, it wasn't a 24 hour event, it was basically during, you know, from morning to night, couple of days, and then people had a variety of selections on which shows to go listen to as well. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was the Friday night started off at 7 p.m. and it went till about midnight, and the Saturday and Sundays were pretty much all day.
Was there an open bar the whole time, or was it a festive attitude?
I think the booze was flowing, and I think it's somewhere. But you know, something I've kind of noticed is that comedy podcasting fans do not get anywhere as near intoxicated as comedy podcasters do. So it was definitely a very lively crowd, but respectful and nice.
That's cool. And one thing is nice about having it at a not so, I guess, frontline hotel, the cost is a lot less too to hold the event.
Oh, this, they should have chosen, well, they could have chosen a cheaper hotel. This was a really nice hotel.
Did they charge an entrance? Did people have to pay to attend, or how did they cover cost?
I think the first year what they did was a Kickstarter. They raised $24,000 to hold the first event, just to book everything. And I'm not entirely sure how all that worked, but I don't think that was just about donations. I think that was more about people trying to pre-purchase tickets as a way to get it going. And then this year they didn't use Kickstarter, and I think it was about $100 for a 3-day pass, or you could spend like about $30 just for a single day pass.
Yeah, so it looks like they had the Friday pass was $29, and it looks like Saturday pass was $59, and Sunday was $49. So it must have been based on some criteria, and it's not really clear why the price varied from day to day. I don't know if you knew.
Because my show was on Friday, so they didn't want to charge as much.
Oh, that's what it was. What? Yeah, I think it was because they had fewer shows
Saturday
available.
Saturday had the
right?
most programming. Yeah.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
And the website, nice design and everything, so professional look, which is good, and that always helps. And it's interesting that you guys had Squarespace and some folks come in as sponsors to this event. Interesting as SoundCloud was there. I don't know if they were there as a sponsor or not, but it's good to see them showing up to the events. I guess that's the main thing too. It shows you that they're still interested in supporting the space.
Well, yeah, you know,
go ahead, Rob. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, I was just gonna say about SoundCloud. From what I've been hearing, their podcast kind of functionality is still what they call is still in beta. So, and I guess you have to make a special request to be able to get a feed for your show on there. So they're not making it as turnkey, and it doesn't feel like they're as committed to podcasting as I think that they probably should be. But anyway, that's probably a whole nother topic here. But
yeah, we're trying to work with them a little bit to get some statistics data out of them, you know, just so that some data can come back, because they basically have, for a better word, a counter. There's no filtering going on. So we're trying to get a little better handle of what's going on their side from a, you know, where their actual consumption is. So that's a whole different, different topic. But, you know, the Kickstarter thing is an interesting concept. We've, you know, to do these type of events, we're getting ready to go out to Vegas with a bunch of geeks and cover CES in January, and we work the sponsor issue and, you know, go through all that, and it's, to me, it's a big drag because I have so much work to do to get ready for that show. So this year, you know, we've had a huge response to the content. I think last year's content, 247 videos have done collectively about 32 million views. And so we're going to, this year we're going to do a crowdfunding, and we're going to launch it mid next week. And what's different about a crowdfunding event versus a Kickstarter is that you can set a goal. If you don't make your complete goal, you still get the cash, as long as you have objectives that can be delivered upon at the cash levels that you're asking for. And I think we've come up, Rob, I don't know, have you seen the sheet of the crowdfunding levels we did for CES?
I mean, it looks great.
You know, just, I mean, go ahead.
I would say it goes the whole spectrum from, you know, an individual contributor all the way up to a big corporate sponsor, which is exactly, I think, what you need to do.
Yeah, and we actually did something kind of cool, Caleb. One of the things that we do at CES is we're in a cab a lot. And the cab, you know, it's $30, $40 everywhere you go now in Vegas when you're, you know, at CES because of the traffic. So one of our backer levels is, you know, pay for a cab ride, you know, $50, buy a cab ride and get a t-shirt. So, and then what we're going to do is, as we're in the cab ride, we're going to, you know, get a shout out. We're going to fire up a camera and we're going to say, hey, this is, you know, Todd, we're headed over to the Venetian. We're going to go cover this event, and want to thank so-and-so for sponsoring the cab ride today and giving him his website and give him a little insight about what's going on, a little back behind the scenes type of deal. And so, you know,
great.
That's, you know, that's kind of how they probably gave way too much away already, but that's kind of how we're going to do our crowdfunding levels is, you know, it's a tangible that they're providing with their cash. And in return, they're going to get something back that's cool and a shout out. And, you know, some people say, well, shout out a video, that's a big deal. But, hey, we're going to throw in a T-shirt, too. So, you know, I see that's the thing to do these days. And we've actually, for the T-shirt thing, We're doing something really slick. I can't announce it yet, but I don't think anyone's ever quite done this in the actual t-shirt giveaway, is how we're going to actually deliver the t-shirts. They're going to have some, I guess for a better word, some options. So it's going to be kind of fun. But next week we'll have a lot of details about that. We'll be hoping that we'll get a lot of backers and crowdfund at least a portion of our coverage at CES. I don't, if we cover the whole deal, I will simply fall over and say, why have I been chasing sponsors around for the past 8 years? Let's talk a little bit about the Man Show. How give the folks that are listening to this a little background on that.
Okay, sure. So my podcast is called Man School.
Oh, Man School. I'm sorry.
It's manschoolshow.com. So it's confusing. Plus, Adam Carolla did the Man Show,
right,
famously on Comedy Central a bunch of years back, which, by the way, I'll give you guys an exclusive. And later this month, Adam Carolla is going to be on Man School. So it'll be the Man Show, Man School connection that the world has been waiting for, whether they knew it or not. And by the way, that is a great advantage of being in Los Angeles, is I could just drive over to Adam Carolla's studio and we can have a chat on the podcast.
That's great.
So I've been in podcasting since about 2009. My first show was called The Gentleman's Club, and I retired that last year because it's basically more of like a goofy, fun bunch of guys sitting around. Well, it was like me interviewing comedians or porn stars or just kind of people who I thought would be fun to talk to. And it was definitely fun, but I basically lost the passion for that particular show. And I'm a sitcom writer, and I have some pretty crazy work hours sometimes. And so I just got to a point with that show where I said, like, I kind of love this, but I kind of hate this, and I don't know what to do. And then when I decided to quit that show, I realized I still wanted to do a podcast, but I needed to find something I was absolutely passionate about. Something that I could see me wanting to do and loving to do for like the next couple of years. And so I really kind of racked my brain and tried to figure out, you know, what it was going to be. And I realized that one of the things I spend most of my time doing is having like real, honest, meaningful conversations with like my male friends. And so I realized, and that's helped me a lot. I know that's helped them a lot. And I've really seen the value in that. So I wanted to do a show where that was at the center of it. So with Man School, each episode I talk to one male about what's a particular life experience they've had. You know, whether it be something that's especially difficult or interesting or unique, and just as a way to, you know, for a listener to walk in somebody else's shoes and, you know, see how you can benefit or be motivated from that experience. But typically I interview people from the world of comedy or podcasting or writers, because those are the worlds that I live in. So it's usually people who have some good self-awareness and who are, you know, good about talking about things. So, for example, my first episode was with Bald Brian Bishop, who's Adam Carolla's sidekick and sound effects maestro. And that was about his brain cancer. And he still has a brain tumor, though he's doing very well today. And so basically, that's a heavy topic, but we're still able to talk about it in a way that is, that's got some depth, but it's also, you know, not like not just sad the whole time, because I want to do a show that's entertaining and fun, but at the same time, you know, takes the topic seriously.
You know, one thing I found when my dad died was that we had, you know, it happened right about it happened on the anniversary of my 200th show. And so, you know, after the funeral and everything, got back and, you know, it's really kind of in this, you know, the zone, you know, it's the morning period and everything. And so what my mom and I did at the time was we did a show that was, we started a show very quickly, a couple weeks after he died, that talked about the process that she went through. And it was more like focused on her. And that show, even though we don't do that show no more, it's still online. We get emails on a regular basis where people have went back and listened, because what we did is we went through about 2 years of, I guess, the transition process. And to be honest with you, it was pretty good therapy. We didn't need shrinks. We talked about all this, talked it all the way through and all the different things. and really put ourselves out there. So I can see where a show, and in this, and we weren't depressing all the time. Obviously, we talked about things that were going on and the weird things that people would find out. But one thing I could see with this show is, you know, a lot of times people, you know, I'll share with my buddy stuff that, you know, not necessarily I'll share with other people, you know, and I think those with wives even have stuff that they probably share with their friends that, you know, maybe they don't share internally. So I could see where this would be an outlet for you to kind of explore people's, what people are doing. I think I'm fascinated. I'm going to have to subscribe and listen because every story, every week's a different story. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So each episode is just about that one particular experience. So something I've been trying to do with the show, which, you know, you guys might appreciate, is I wanted to kind of test the theory of like the value of an individual podcast episode. Because when it comes to entertainment shows or more interview-based shows, which are not topic-based, it's you give the listener, the potential listener, an out if they say, oh, I don't know who this guest is, so maybe I don't want to listen this week. So with my show, instead of just saying, here's who the guest is, you know, I promote the episode with a title.
Right.
Like very, very heavily so that people can say, oh, I might want to hear about what it's like, you know, to be a single dad and not just about, oh, what is this individual interview all about? And I think that's definitely been helpful.
Yeah, and it's definitely it's the story more than the person.
It is, yeah. And I've definitely gotten some great people on, but that's also one of the things that makes it a little bit harder for me in booking guests, because I'll have people say, oh, I'd love to do your show sometime. And it's like, I don't know if you can do my show. You know, what can we talk about? Right. You know, what's going to be 34 minutes of life experience you've had that's going to be, you know, compelling enough? And so a lot of times I'll have to learn about people and then approach them, or if people want to be on the show and they already kind of know what's up, they'll say, oh, here's a few ideas I have, and then we'll always make a plan before the episode starts.
Hey, Rob.
Yeah, I agree. It definitely makes sense, because I mean even from what I see with you know, hundreds of podcasts, you know with the Zune catalog that I manage, is that I'm looking for like reasons to feature a show, and if I, you know, and a lot of podcasts will have like the, you know, just a name of a guest. And I don't believe that a lot of people would recognize every name that would be on that list of episodes of guests that they've had. I mean, even if they're, you know, TV celebrities, not everybody knows what the real name of a TV star is, because they're always using a stage name, right? So you know, but if you had, just like what you're talking about, if you had the topic of the conversation, which oftentimes is hard because a comedy podcast tends to just riff off of, you know, just the flow of the conversation, right? It's not really focused on anything. But I think if you want to create content that will continue to drive views and listens over a long period of time, getting more focused on a topic is definitely worth the effort.
You know, Rob, I've for years, when this whole genre kicked off, and when I, you know, started doing my show, in the back of my head was always a show topic that I always wanted to do, but I don't think I could ever pull it off correctly. You know, having been prior military and been in the Navy, you know, what do sailors do? They tell sea stories, and really sea stories are about their exploits around the world. And I have heard some whoppers, and I mean, busting down, gut-wrenching, you're laughing until you cannot stand up sea stories and just crazy antics. But in order to have a show like that, I would have to have the guy would have to show up with a mask, and they would have to have their voices disguised, because there's no way we could ever do that show, and because some of these some of these stories are definitely probably not on the edge of legality, would be just fantastic. Now, Caleb, if you're ever looking for a show idea, there is one, because I'm going to tell you, these guys get into going to foreign countries, you know, alcohol, women, the whole nine yards, and you can end up with some pretty incredible sea stories. And of course, sea stories are like fishing stories. Sure. You know, the more you...
I did an episode at Man School that was one of my absolute favorites with Special Forces Green Beret Robert Patrick Lewis, who also hosts a podcast called Far From Centered. And so we did a show where we talked for about 45 minutes about what it's like to come home from war.
Oh.
You know, what it's like to be over there. And like, he's Special Forces. He was way behind enemy lines in Afghanistan, you know, and all these missions he was doing. And then, you know, what it's like in terms of how your brain, it just has such a hard time handling the change when you come back and all these things. So it was one of the nice things that I've liked, just being able to talk to people like that who've had these major out there unique life experiences.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, some of those sea stories are pretty real, especially from the horse's mouth. It's very, very entertaining.
Yeah. And you know, I will say one thing about the Special Forces guys. There are certain groups of Special Forces, because you have different classes of Special Forces. You know, you've got the SEALs, you've got Delta, you've got the Green Berets. Some of those guys are of a mental disposition.
I can know where you're going.
You won't know. You won't know just talking to them. You'll have no idea. It will not, you know, you expect this guy to be big and bulky. It's the 5'7" dude that's kind of average that will just ruin your day. You know, these guys, I mean, these guys are, they have a different, there's a certain, I'm sure there's a certain some sort of profile, brain profile they use. I have seen some of these guys do some stuff that just, I can't talk about it, but I'm just going to say, wow. I remember years ago being on a flight, and I won't say where, but I'll just say that I was on a flight, and the guy sitting beside me, I basically said, and he was, you know, had some special talents. And I said to him, I said, if we crash, I said, I'm following you. And he says to me, good luck. And I said, oh, I knew right then and where, because, you know, he's looking at me. Here's this, you know, sailor that, you know, I do my mile and a half PT twice a year. But, you know, that's the extent, right? And, yeah, some of these guys are pretty incredible. They really, really are. And, I'm just glad they're on our side. That's, I'll leave it with that.
But so yeah. What you're saying is that our mental kind of view of who these people should look like is like Rambo or somebody like that.
That's
or
wrong.
A Schwarzenegger. Right. But yeah. They're just like normal guys, right?
Yeah,
that you just wouldn't think would have these kind of capabilities. Right.
Yeah. And there's a few guys that are the Rambo types, but I will tell you that, you meet them on the street, you have no idea, no clue. I mean, they are some cool, they have to be cool cats to do some of the stuff that they do. They are just, you know, they don't flinch under pressure. They go places where you're like, they're going to get caught, and they don't. And it's a whole psychology. I'm going to tell you straight up. It's not about the physical part. It's part of it, but don't get me wrong. These guys are, wow. Yeah. Okay. I am in awe of those fellas. By the way, if any of you are listening, I'm a big fan. So those life stories, those life stories, then you can get pretty personal. You can maybe get into topic areas that people get a little uncomfortable, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I only do the show in person, is that I want people to feel as comfortable as possible. And I think it just makes for a better show for this type of thing. Not to mention also just being in Los Angeles, it's easy. I mean, I live in the middle of town.
Right.
There's millions, maybe not millions, but there's thousands of wonderful people who could be guests who don't live too far.
Right.
So usually they come to me or I go to them, or there's also a studio I can use because my show's on the Sideshow Network, and in west side of Los Angeles, they have a really nice studio.
You know, all these cool things, Rob, he can go use a studio.
Yeah.
If I want to go use a studio in Honolulu, it's like get out your credit card and pay someone for $1,000 for an hour. You know, they don't exist. But that's one of the advantage of living in a big city.
So Caleb, tell us about the Sideshow Network. I don't believe that a lot of folks know a lot about that network per se. I know that there's a lot of great shows that come out of that network, and people are probably knowledgeable about the shows, but maybe not about the network. You know?
Yeah, it's sort of interesting. I think a lot of podcast networks, especially in the world of entertainment and comedy, come out of some sort of flagship show that's so strong it kind of carries everything else. You know, for Earwolf, it's Comedy Bang Bang. Adam Carolla's network, it's the Adam Carolla Show, and that sort of thing. But with the Sideshow Network, it is a company started from the Levity Entertainment Group. And if you work in show business, you know Levity. If you don't, you probably don't. But they manage comedians. They own either most of or part of all the improv comedy clubs, and they produce television specials, mostly stand-up comedy specials. And so just super involved in a super successful company in entertainment. And they have a kind of digital media arm. And I think it was 2 years ago, they decided to start a podcast network and as a way to do more work with the comedians that they already work for or work with. And so, but they've branched out to whereas there's great people on there like Phil Hendry, who's an absolute radio legend, and Zane Lamprey has a show, and he's a really successful TV host, or Tommy Chong from those pot smoking kids, Cheech and Chong. So plenty of people who are names, as well as people who are successful just in the media, or like they just launched a new show from former NFL, controversial NFL player Terrell Owens. And so it's an eclectic mix of entertaining shows, and the network's definitely growing and doing well. But I guess it's sort of hard to identify because there's not the one like huge show where you're like, oh yeah, that's those guys. But there's a nice studio in West LA and some great people over there.
So do they, is it just because if you work with them or sign with them to do the comedy tour, is it you're on there, or, you know, what is, obviously there has to be, I'm sure there's a direct relationship then with each of the folks that are on there has some sort of, you know, ongoing, is the relationship restricted to the podcast? I guess, tell me about the relationship with them, the business relationship.
So basically, somebody who has a show over there, when he found out about when I was developing Man School, after I had closed my last show, he told them about it and told them about me. And they're like, oh, yeah, we'd like to meet with him. That sounds interesting. And so I met with them, and then they said, we'd like to sign you. You know, here's what we could do for you. Here's what we think you could do for us. And I said, sure, let's do it. And one of the things that I really liked about these guys was that though they were newer to podcasting in that space, they were just a very successful media company. And so I figured, like, okay, this is sort of a different approach, because I think a lot of times in new media, you have companies who are more from scratch, or maybe it's more from tech. But these guys were successful in entertainment. So I'm not a stand-up comic, so I can't tour at any of their comedy clubs or anything like that. And so I'm, you know, cut off from part of the business there. But I just figured, like, okay, these are successful guys. I think they can figure this thing out and do a good job. And so that's what's been the case so far. But so, yeah, we have a partnership, and it's nice, you know. And I've had an opportunity to be guests on other shows on the network, and other people have been on my show, and there's a lot of great people.
Well, that's cool. And it's, I think the comedy guys, you know, and if I look at our business, besides this show, if I just, you know, if I step out, the comedy shows have been so hard to monetize. It's been very, very difficult. That is a category that, you know, I think we got 300 or 400 comedy podcasts that are on the network, and it's really, really hard to sell advertising into those guys. And I think it takes someone who has that background. You know, if they, you know, if they've worked with comedy folks, you know, in other businesses, they're the guys that are going to make it happen. Because, boy, I tell you, and they know what to say, I guess, for a better word. But we've had huge, huge challenge selling comedy advertising into the content. And, you know, really, these guys, you know, these guys have great shows. And, you know, we got to make sure they get paid, you know. And I understand some of them do it as exposure to the road shows. But, you know, as you said here, you don't do a road show. You don't go to the comedy clubs. So, you know, how's it worked out for you from the money standpoint with them so far? Are you doing okay? Or I don't want to pry too deep.
Oh, sure. Well, the show is making money, and there's I didn't take on ads for maybe the first 15 weeks or something like that. And then, you know, wanted to kind of build an audience a little bit. And before the network could pitch my show to advertisers, they figured, well, let's kind of have a baseline figure that's, you know, based upon a couple shows. Right. So did that. And I've had advertisers ever since. And so I've had a variety of advertisers who have wanted to reappear on the show, and you know, or who just said, let's do a campaign for this amount of time, right. You know, whether it's network wide or on a few shows of the network. And so that's been nice. You know, I just found out Squarespace wants to re-up for a few shows, and which is great because I use Squarespace for manschoolshow.com, and it's a great web service. And basically like I, you know, have to do the, I don't have to, but I do the website myself. And so it's just, makes it a lot easier because I'm not a ninja web guy,
right?
But what I noticed with comedy people in the podcasting space, and I'm a sitcom writer, I consider myself a comedy person, but since I'm not a stand-up comic, or I don't really have like a live show to promote, I feel not entirely part of that in terms of the financial options. Because with the comedy people, you do have the touring, you do have the merchandise, which people, I think people just especially love the opportunity to go see a performer and then be able to purchase the merchandise, you know, straight from them. You know, they get to have that right. Personal interaction. They get to have an autograph, that sort of thing. And so the more traditional comedy folks definitely have, you know, multiple ways to pull in revenue. And for me, it's just the advertising right now. But I definitely in my future see a possible, you know, Man School book or ebook or some other bonus digital content that'll be for sale. And I think that'll be for next year.
Well, Rob, I'm glad to see these guys are making some money. That's, yeah. I'm a big fan of, you know, podcasters getting paid for what they do, and whether it be through advertisers or whether it be through, you know, fan support, you know, we all have to eat. Right. And I know, Caleb, you have a day job, but at the same time, I know some content creators whose day job is not paying as much as their podcast job. And when it can, you know, when you get to that point, then it can become almost, you know, a higher focus and a switchover. And if it doesn't make as much as your day job, then it's a nice supplement. And as I tell people, it's always nice to have your car payment made by your podcast, or maybe even your house payment.
You know, I think that's a really healthy attitude. If your podcast will supplement your income, then you can have a lot more of a purer creative vision. You're going to be more patient with the process, and you're going to have more fun. And right. I got into this with a day job, and I said, okay, I want to do this thing because I want another creative outlet. I want a creative outlet where there's no, you know, there's no boss, there's no television network telling me to do. It's basically I get to come up with my vision, whether it's good or not. You know, who knows? But let's give it a try. And I've almost been kind of shying away from advertisers for a while, because I just figured especially with my old show, that it wasn't, almost like advertisers weren't for me, and almost like I'd like to, okay, for example, let's say that I could make $40 a week. You know, to me, it just seemed like if it was only going to be something like that, how right. about I just not make that money and then just not have an ad on my show? So that was my attitude then, and there's some more money involved now, so that's better. But also, podcasting has brought me more opportunities to make money and other things. Like there's a magazine article I'm writing now that I don't think I can say what it is yet, but like that's something because of my podcast. The the TV show I write on, Sullivan and Son, a sitcom on TBS, they asked me to host the official Sullivan and Son podcast, you know, as a result of my podcast. And so that was a great, great thing. You got to interview all the actors and other writers and producers and put out 12 of those shows to go with the season that we had on the summer. And that was a fantastic thing. So I think podcasting can, you know, lead down different paths that'll make you some dough, even if it's not as simple as an advertiser each episode.
Rob, don't you think we've overlooked the ancillary benefits of having a show? We haven't talked about that a lot here, have we?
No, no, we haven't. But I mean, I think it's a great topic, and I guess it's probably hard to find one guest that can kind of encapsulate that opportunity. But it's something that I'll definitely work on to try and. You know, find a guest that can come in and really speak to those variety of options. But yeah, I think it's really, really fascinating what's going on right now. I mean, a lot of shows are starting to really kind of team up with networks more and more. I know, Todd, you know, you and I, you know, back in the early days of podcasting, really kind of started that with the Tech Podcast kind of network, that whole concept. And now it's really, I think, reaching a very important piece of the podcasting kind of business now, is that as these networks grow, those networks become more powerful and can aggregate, you know, sponsors just like what you do on a daily basis. And I think that's the path for most podcasts to make money now. But you also have to be at a certain quality in order to get signed, right?
Right.
So, Caleb, talk about the process that you felt like, you know, you had to go through in order to get signed by a podcast network of sorts.
You know, I think for me, it was, I had to spend a couple of years getting my skills as a host up. And so by doing the Gentleman's Club, my old show, you know, I did that for 154 episodes. So by doing that for a bunch of years, by being a guest on as many shows as would have me, whether, you know, it was terrestrial radio, podcasting, or being on a Skype interview, or being in, you know, a studio with somebody, a different studio, or even, you know, some television appearances. Basically, I think I just needed to get my skills up to whereas I could host a show based upon a format that was interesting, because me myself, you know, I do some things in public, but I'm not like a super popular public, you know, figure, celebrity or something like that. So if you're someone who is a notable figure, you can go to a company and say, I would like to do a podcast and I already have a following, and they'll say, all right, let's do it. But so for me, I think I needed to have the combination of being a good host who can get the job done, be smart and entertaining, but also have a concept which is marketable beyond myself. And so once I got to that point was when I met with the Sideshow Network, and that's when everything seemed to come together.
You know, one thing I think, Rob, that we really have to focus on too is that, you know, I very much understand the value of a tight vertical. You know, the tight vertical is where, you know, Tech Podcast, you know, was, you know, really a huge amount of money went in Tech Podcast, you know, and went to podcasters. And, you know, when we launched Blueberry, we wanted to get a bigger base. But even with that community, there's each category has a segment of shows that are the go-to shows every time. You know, they are the, you know, they're the 20 or 30 that are at the top of my list quite a bit. And it boils back down to consistency, quality of show, and folks that have had some chops, people that I can trust. And I think what Caleb has just said is exactly true. But I think that the expectation by a lot of content creators is I'm going to get in this thing in year one, I'm going to be making money. And I you know, if we can get folks out of that thought process, we might hold people a lot longer in doing shows. Because, you know, I look back at, you know, I was lucky. I had a sponsor within 9 months. But, you know, if I think about those early shows and I look back and listen to them, I cringe. You know, I really, really do. They were more raw at that time for sure. But, you know, it took a couple of years to, you know, really kind of, you know, perfect. I don't even say perfect because I'm still perfecting. I think we all are. I think that's important. But so many folks want this instant gratification these days.
Well, it just takes time to build that following and that audience that then can translate into something of value to a sponsor, you know, or advertiser. It just doesn't happen instantaneously unless you're a major celebrity walking right into it. And I think that's somewhat what we've seen be successful is celebrities that have been big and popular on other media, like TV or broadcast radio, stepping into podcasting and building an audience pretty quickly. And I think other people see that and they think, you know, I can do that too. When in reality, it's you've got a much steeper hill to climb.
And also there's levels of trust. So Caleb, did you feel too, it took a while for your audience to hone your audience? You know, I'm sure you had a lot of people come in. You know, what I saw in my early days was a lot of people come in and they decided within 4 or 5 shows, they liked me or not. And they would leave or they would stay. And those that stayed have stayed for a long, long time. What do you find with your show for your audience mix?
I think my audience mix has kind of been all over the place because my show launched February 1st of this year. And so there was definitely, because I already had a podcast following and somewhat of a social media following, I was able to tell a lot of people like, oh, hey, I have a new show. You know, why don't you check it out? So the first month, you know, I had a lot of traffic. And then I was in the new and noteworthy on iTunes, pretty prominently placed for the first 2 months. And then traffic went down a little bit. And then, you know, one thing I find is that even though I try and make my shows more topic-based and guest-based, I'll still have, you know, a popular guest will bring more of an audience.
Of course.
So kind of goes all over the place. But I feel like, you know, I have been able to have like a slower growth of listener retention. So there have been people who, you know, come and sample the show, whether because they see, because I've gotten occasionally featured on the front page of iTunes podcasts, you know, things like that will bring in a lot more eyeballs, or not eyeballs, it would be earballs.
Earballs.
Is that the right? Earlobes, maybe?
Ear canals. So that's right.
People sample, but a lot of people do stay. And that's what I would like is, you know, obviously regular listeners, but I'm certainly happy for anyone who wants to check out Man School and, you know, whether they enjoy the episode and want to stay or they just listen to the one, you know, I'm thankful for all of them.
Do you find that the show for you is, you know, when I do my show, I always think that I'm, you know, talking to my friends, you know, and you're obviously, and I do a solo show in this show. So the solo show, it's like I'm talking to my friends. Obviously, here we're talking together. But on your show, you're talking with the guest. How do you take that topic that you're having with this individual and move it into, you know, fan involvement? Are you asking for feedback during the show? Are you, you know, what is your process there for fan engagement?
I would like to increase fan engagement, but I do have a voicemail, and also my email address, manschoolshow@gmail.com, and you know, my two Twitter accounts. I encourage people to say, hey, like, you know, tell me what you would like to hear about, and I'll see if I can find a guest who fits that description. And sometimes I'll play voicemails on the show, or if I do have a show that is about a topic that people want to hear about, for example, like my recent single dad show. That was a show that I probably would have done anyway, but at the same time, you know, somebody said, hey, I would really like to hear this topic. It's, you know, I'm a single dad and I think it would be really great to hear. So I was able to do that show and give that person a shout out at the beginning.
It seems my voicemail line has we got a lot of usage for many, many years, but the last year or so, the number of folks using the voicemail has declined. And I'm actually going to opt to pull it and not have it up anymore and rely on email and people sending audio comments via their mobile devices and so forth, which is, you know, I never thought I would do that. But if it's something is not being effective for me, that part of my show has changed a little bit. So I do find that my audience has has from a better standpoint has, well, they've shifted a little bit, just like I have with age, and I'm sure that has a little bit to do with it as well. But Rob, go ahead.
Yeah, Todd, I think that's an interesting kind of trend line that you've identified, is that people aren't calling in and leaving audio comments as much. I've been hearing some talk about some new platforms that are coming from some big players that would kind of turn on this ability for people to almost make public voicemail shows.
Right.
It's kind of hard to describe, because it's basically creating apps that would enable people to have back and forth conversations that would be turned into private and public shows.
Huh.
It's kind of a new concept, but it's trying to get audio production. You know, the concept of talk radio given to the audience, right, to facilitate that conversation. But I think it's really, really an interesting trend that you talk about, that people aren't calling into your show and using that kind of functionality for an established show. But the question is whether or not the audience would conversate about your show separately from your show. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting question.
Oh, to have like a talk line open while you're doing, of course, it would apply to live shows. It wouldn't, and I can't see it working on a pre-recorded show that gets posted.
Well, no, it could, because these back and forth conversations could happen externally from your show, about your show, just between the audience. And so I wonder, though, are fewer people wanting to participate like that from an audio standpoint, or are we moving towards being primarily text-based and video-based on this stuff, and the audio conversation parts doesn't have a big future? But I know that there are platforms that are kind of trying to do some innovation in that area of trading audio conversations.
You know, I've always thought it would be cool if I could have some sort of a board here where software is running and someone's in the chat room and they basically press a button, says I want to say something, and you allow them to come in like radio. You know, it's you know, you can have people call another Skype line or something, but I want something that's just to reach over here and touch it. I don't want to have to think too much about it. I don't know if that's in someone's play deck or not, but that might be kind of cool to have that.
Aren't
I know
the guys who are supposed to implement that stuff anyway.
We
God, that's your job, right?
No, that's not my space. No, not my space. Never mind. That's more overhead than I want to have to deal with. First of all, it has to, in any business, and I do run a business, all things we do must lead to revenue. And yeah. That's you know, that's, hate to say it that way, but it's true. You know, if it's not making revenue, throw it in the trash, because it obviously wasn't worth enough value for someone to pay for it if it's not making money.
Caleb, what's your thought on where we are in the podcasting space now? I mean, you've been involved in it now since 2009. Where do you think its strengths are now and versus its weaknesses, and where do you think the space needs to improve to become more part of more people's lives? What's your thought?
You know, it's funny because Los Angeles, I think I just put some man schools on because I bought a bunch of the LA podcast festival, so I figured I'd wear them for your show. But the Los Angeles is like more of a tech town than I think people give it credit for. There's a lot of people here in line for the new iPhone whenever it comes out. I mean, it's really crazy. And I think just because the nature of the entertainment business is that people are going to be more involved in emerging technologies because it's just part of everything. So I'll meet a lot of people who have favorite podcasts. And I almost feel like some days that podcasting is like a totally normal thing. And then other days, I meet people who seem to be like super into tech, who like don't even know what a podcast is. And so it's still at a point where there's just a lot of people who who don't really know what's going on in our space. But at the same time, now with like Stitcher being offered in like certain vehicles and things like that, I think the word podcast is what's going to make things tricky, because basically with so much radio moving over to apps, that people are like, well, can I? People say to me, like, oh, I can hear your show on Stitcher, right? So I don't need iTunes, and like they're a little confused about the content delivery. So I think one of the great strengths of podcasting now is that there are more great shows than ever. You know, and there's a lot of people who've really emerged as people you want to spend time with, because they put the work in. You know, they've gotten their shows really good, and they've gotten their skills up. But I think what I'm very curious what's next is, you know, is satellite radio going to stick around? Are those satellites going to fall out of orbit, literally, or just due to lack of interest? Or, you know, or is terrestrial radio? I think terrestrial radio will certainly stick around in some capacity, but with where things are going with technology, you know, with Wi-Fi, with cars, with Verizon LTE, like what's the general public? You know, not just our not just people listening to this show or watching the show now, like how is the general public going to relate to the content, you know, that we all put out? You know, is it going to be as easy to get this show as it is the Rush Limbaugh show, you know, on the dashboard of your car in a year? I mean, maybe, you know, and then calling something a podcast, I think, may just confuse more people. But I think a lot of us are doing some really good work.
You know,
well, I mean, if we don't call it a podcast, what do you think we should call it?
A show.
I would call it a Toddcast in tribute to Mr. Cochran. Is that appropriate?
Toddcast, yeah.
That's funny.
There
no,
you go.
No.
okay. All right. That's vetoed. I don't know. I mean, it's to me, I think of my show more as internet radio, even though it's not a live show, which people associate live with radio. What we all do is basically radio. And then so, you know, Stitcher, they call it Stitcher Radio. And like, to me, that makes a lot of sense. You know, the iHeart Radio app has got a million radio stations on it, but there's also podcasts on it too. And so I think a lot of people just don't see that there's a difference. Right. And that's probably good going forward, I would say.
I think so too. And what, if you guys didn't see it, Stitcher latest update to their app now is a podcatcher. You can download or you can sync your Stitcher app so it downloads the media so you can listen to it. I don't know. I guess you can download your playlist. I guess it's just like a regular old school podcatcher now too as well.
Well, Todd, I think it's a little bit of a realization that not everybody has the capability at all times to be able to stream.
Right.
And I think that's always been kind of at the root of why podcasting has been successful in the long run is this offline listening capability that a lot of these platforms that have been all about streaming, right? And I think that there's been this big rush to streaming in the podcasting space for a lot of apps, and then a lot of these apps are really not using the term podcast much at all anymore.
Right.
And I'm seeing more and more platforms coming out not using the term podcast, but I think that with the YouTube recent announcement of offline viewing capability, I think we're probably going to see the download part kind of come back as an important piece of all of these platforms, and I think it's a good trend.
You know, Rob, yeah, I have to laugh. Is, you know, the on what day was it? The 9th was my 9th year anniversary show for Geek News Central. And I, you know, I'm thinking about this thing, 9 years doing this show. It's crazy. So we're fast approaching our 900 shows. So it shows they've been pretty consistent over the years.
Wow.
And, you know, I was kind of relating with the audience, you know, when we first started the show in 2004, October 9th of 2004. None of us knew what we were doing, number one. But number two, the one thing we all got was that the ability to be able to, and again, I want to just go back to where we were in 2004, the ability to plug our iPod or MP3 player into our USB port on our computer, get the content, and walk away with it was revolutionary.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
You know, because in 2004, we didn't have the iPhone. We, you know, we were still using Motorola flips, and there
was bandwidth wasn't that great.
There was no bandwidth. That's there wasn't any. And so it didn't until the introduction of the iPhone, and the bandwidth still sucked. We really didn't have this experience of being able to just play, you know, play anywhere at any time. And now, you know, it's completely opposite. We're in the mode of I can get any content I want anytime, anywhere, any place, almost. So the because we had the ability to get in the living rooms and the earballs, as Caleb said earlier, of these guys early, you know, it's basically allowed us to, you know, we kind of kick-started the whole digital online stuff from a mobile standpoint, because really we were doing mobile before anyone else was doing mobile, because we were taking the shows were going everywhere. It's just now the methodology has changed a little bit. So, you know, we see it. We got, there's 150 different devices or so that we're tracking that are consuming podcast content. People are consuming it on Rokus, on tablets, you name it. If it's got a screen and it has a play button, they're listening. So
TVs,
TV, you know, just whatever way, you know, people are just getting content different. Now the challenge is breaking out, you know, being found. I was one of the top first 100 or shows, so it was pretty easy to garner an audience in those days, because there was nobody else. Now there's,
you know, something that I'll see, curious what you guys think. Like, in my personal experience, the podcast app I use maybe the most, you know, other than the regular iTunes kind of podcast app, is ESPN Radio. I use the ESPN Radio app to listen to sports talk radio every single morning, and then the ESPN Radio podcasts are also available on this app.
Right,
and so. So I'll stream the radio station, and I don't need to be on the Wi-Fi connection. And then the radio comes in perfectly. It's fantastic. And then when I'm on the Wi-Fi, I can just stream the podcast. And so for me, how that's changed that is I used to have a lot of offline listening. You know, I'll download something, listen to it later. And but with this one app, it's like I've got all these great sports shows that I like in one place, and I have the option to listen live or listen to archive shows. And for me, like, that app is so revolutionary, because it works so well, it's so functional, and I don't have to always be on Wi-Fi to enjoy the stuff streaming. And it's like I use that, and I'm like, wow, that to me that feels like the future, even though it's just kind of simple, but in a very helpful, useful way.
Do you feel, Caleb, that you would be benefited having your own app, or would you rather be on a network app?
There is a Sideshow Network app. I don't know how popular it is, but you know, you can get all the shows on there, and it definitely works very well. But I feel like an app would be good, but I feel like in terms of like making more progress in the space, there's an app is good, because what it allows people to do is people may find your show on the App Store when they're not looking for a podcast, and they may come across it. Or I know the second largest search engine in the world is YouTube. My show is not on YouTube in any capacity, but it would certainly make sense that it'd be good to have it there for in some version, just because it's the second largest search engine in the world. So, right. So I think you know, there's only so much we can do in terms of trying to promote our shows to podcasters, people who listen to podcasts regularly. So I know something I want to look at for the future is, how do I reach people in those ways who may not even, who just are not as, like, you know, clued in to what we're up to, and give them an opportunity to come join us.
And doesn't it all boil down to marketing, and marketing requires dollars, and, you know, there's obviously ways to do it socially, but, you know, I know, you know, I was shocked to hear someone tell me the other day what their marketing budget was. And I was like, what? And he said, yeah, we're spending that much money. And it was an incredible amount of money they were spending on marketing. And, you know, I've been kind of the anti-marketing type of, you know, spend money on marketing. I don't need to spend money on marketing. My audience is going to market my show. But at the same time, they only have a certain sphere of influence too. So, but you know, how you, what do you want to do to reach those folks?
I don't have a thorough game plan yet, but I think it's just an important thing. I think the important thing is just availability. And so if, you know, if somebody is out there on YouTube looking for the type of content that I put out, if they don't care if it's audio or video and they're searching around for stuff and right. I'm not up there, then that's somebody I've missed out on.
Rob, any thoughts?
Yeah, I just was thinking about marketing. I mean, I have a marketing background. I have a marketing degree from college. And I'm becoming less of a fan of traditional marketing as being really an effective way of doing anything these days. I think we're moving into a whole new age of kind of trust and relationship building that is going to replace marketing. And I think the whole concept of marketing has been broadcast focused, right? Of just blasting out your message and trying to get it out to as many people as you can and hope you make a connection. But I think that what really works now, especially with all of us having smartphones and being online and there's so much data about us available out there, it's just inevitable that we're going to move into an era that's going to be more relationship driven, right? And more trust driven and more targeted. And I think that's part of what I think podcasting struggles with a little bit is probably more targeted than a lot of other medium than radio and those kind of things where you can get very specific to a genre that and then you can associate with a particular type of audience. But I think even in podcasting, we still don't have deep metrics about who our audience is and how old they are and what they like to do and all this stuff to really be fully effective at targeting and monetizing. So I think it's still really early days in that.
One of the folks in the chat room said, I wish I could live stream more like terrestrial radio, but I'm limited to 2.5 gigs, so I stick to the downloads. So, you know, that is true, though. Some folks, if they listen to a lot of podcasts that, and, you know, I have a pretty large library. I typically carry about 100 shows with me at all times because I'm always listening to shows making, you know, kind of have my own little crib notes on different podcasts. So,
yeah, Todd, I do the same thing. I've got like 176 podcast subscriptions at any moment.
but they rotate every week. I'll kill 50 of them and then I'll add 50 new ones and then, you know, I'll go through them. And so, you know, and it's true though. I even find myself, I give a show, man, sometimes I give a show 3 minutes, 3-4 minutes. If they haven't hit me in 3 or 4 minutes, I'm out of there, you know? So my warning to most podcasters is make an impression the first couple of minutes. Cause if you don't, you're going to lose someone.
Well, Todd, I see with the people subscribing and unsubscribing, it's across the whole platform. I mean, and this is over the years since about 2008 or so, it's been almost a one-to-one relationship between the overall platform, people subscribing and unsubscribing. So people are churning through shows very rapidly and they're trying out new shows. I think that there's a lot more trial that happens just around people that just will download one episode and listen to it for a while before they will make that next step into subscribing to it. And I think that's, but they're just people searching for good content right now. And I mean, that's been going on for years and it probably will continue.
Yeah. I think there was a guest we had on the show recently that, you know, made a comment, Caleb, this fits right in with your guys' show. They basically say, you know, tell a story. You know, if you don't tell a story, it's not going to resonate with folks and make it relatable, you know, and that's something obviously you're doing with your show. And that's, you know, why you're having success and take some risk. You know, you've got guests on that are, you know, that are out there putting themselves on the line and it doesn't touch their life. I think that's all, you know, your show, what you're doing has all those components and it's largely what makes the connection between you and the audience. I think a show like Caleb's is destined for a huge numbers just based on some of those, you know, those small things that always are connector points with audience members. And I think that will help you too from a word of mouth standpoint. I think people will spread the word. Oh, by the way, I listened to something that maybe, you know, someone's going through something, you ought to listen to this, you know, and vice versa. So
very cool. Thank you for saying that, Todd.
Hey, Rob, we're an hour 20 here, and have you done some homework? Or are we looking at who we're going to have on next week?
I don't have a person to announce yet. I'm sorry.
And I'll have to say, Rob has got the hardest job of the show in booking folks. So I want to, you know, I want to thank Rob for, you know, working on that every week and getting folks booked to be on the show. And I'll definitely announce who we're going to have on when Rob gets someone scheduled or if I find someone. But if you've got someone that you want us to interview, you definitely email us here. It's either Todd at New Media Show or Rob at New Media Show. And
I have an idea.
Who should we have?
Rob, you have connections. What about Bill Gates?
Hey, there you go. That's a man that's going to have a lot to say about podcasting. That's for sure.
You're a Microsoft guy. You're a Seattle guy. Hook it up, right?
I have a lot to say to Bill Gates about podcasting.
Yeah, I'll bet you do.
And Rob probably doesn't want to be on the show when I say it.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a good way to get me fired. Thank you. No.
So what if you get Bill Gates on the show and you're talking about podcasting? He said, "Oh, I don't have an iPod. Can I still listen to it?"
No, I should have on Steve Ballmer because he's not going to even care to fire me because he's out the door.
We'd have to turn the volumes down because the guy loves to scream.
But one topic that I've been thinking about here that I'm probably going to try and drill in on for my next guest is the whole topic of video podcasting. I think it's under threat right now. And I think it's being driven into the ground based on YouTube. And I believe a lot of podcast platforms are the new ones that are coming that haven't necessarily gotten off the ground yet are pushing audio primarily. And fewer platforms are supporting video and audio podcasts.
You want to know the reason?
It's monetization.
The money's in the audio.
Well, that and also it's expensive to distribute video.
Yeah.
I mean, you know firsthand, but I think there still is a place for video and podcasting. I just don't know how that needs to change in order to make it work.
It's hard to make it work.
I know it is. Yeah, that's the question.
You know, and you look at this show right now. We're pushing to YouTube, and you know, YouTube has. I used to pay Amazon $300-$400 a month for my streaming bill, you know, and now what is my streaming bill? Zero, you know, and so when I get done with the show, the video is up on YouTube and then it's available right away. And then, you know, a couple hours later, I push out this show in the podcast channels and it's available via that method. But, you know, I think my YouTube presence is pretty small. And that's a whole topic we've covered many, many times on the deltas between YouTubers and podcasters. But
I think it gets back to, I hear that a lot. I hear that a lot to podcasters saying, well, I'm just on YouTube for my video side. But then when you talk to them at a deeper level, they're finding that they're not getting much of an audience over there, that they were getting a bigger audience for their video as a podcast than they were on YouTube. Well, so
it's still this show still goes out as a podcast, you know, so it's still available on all those channels. But, you know, the difference is we're on all the channels. We're on everything. You know, we're not just on YouTube. We're in every. So across the board is where we make up the difference, you know, because we get some stuff on the Roku and some people watch on Google TV and now Chromecast. And, you know, so, you know, people look at the show in a variety of different.
Caleb.
Wait, I'm listening.
Everything you guys are saying, this is very good stuff.
It's got to kind of lighten the topic. It's getting a little too serious here, right?
I mean, I think you should listen to Man School. There's some value in listening. And do I have a lot of leftover stickers from the LA Podcast Festival? Yes, that's the answer to that question.
Well, I don't know. I think you have five fewer now.
Yeah. No, I'm going to wear these all day. That's my marketing budget, Todd. It's the price of my clogged pores.
So what you should do is go out and, you know, in LA, I know the big thing right now is people stand on the corner of the street. Get you one of those billboards where you wear, you know, one on each side, and then just put Man School stickers everywhere and then stand out on the street, look like a bum. And, you know, you can probably get a few listeners that way.
Yeah, I think that's how people are attracted to content, right? Yeah, that's how they know that I produce a high quality show, because I'm naked with a sandwich board that says Man School walking down Hollywood Boulevard.
I guarantee if you were naked with one of those, you would definitely get the attention of not only probably the weirdos on they may the local law enforcement too.
Todd, I think you also get the attention of the Los Angeles Police Department too.
and people may think Man School might be a show about adult content or something.
Yeah, I mean, I do have a past of having interviewed porn stars, so you know, people sometimes associate me with that. But I assure you, Man School, there's no porn.
Did you need therapy after interviewing all the porn stars, or what is the mindset of a typical porn star?
Oh, it's entirely healthy. Yeah, it's there's really no issue at all. I would say they're complicated.
Healthy
folks.
Exercise, Todd.
Yeah, they stretch a lot, if that's a healthy form of exercise. I needed therapy before, during, and after, but that was kind of unrelated.
Yeah, I think so. So did any of your guests offer to demonstrate?
You know, it's funny you ask that, and I will respectfully decline. But...
showing him their professional skills, I think, is probably the more proper way of saying it.
You know, yeah, certain to, you know, when I was 30 years ago, when I was living in Guam, the complex that I lived in, little did I know, I rented this apartment. And, you know, I'd go down to the pool, and there would be like, there just wasn't normal, the normal bikini wear. It was like itsy bitsy teeny weeny little bikinis and all kinds of different stuff at the pool. And it turns out that this apartment complex was like the most popular place where all the local strippers, rented. So I lived in basically a stripper complex. And, yes, was a fun experience for a young 19-year-old, but I will leave it at that.
Yeah.
All right. We have digressed. So, folks.
We have, yes.
But it's okay. The show is, we can cover whatever topic we want on this show. We're safe.
That's right. It's live. Whatever we say goes straight out, right? Yeah.
The FCC doesn't care.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the beauty. All right, folks. I want you guys to get over and check out The Man School, and definitely check his show out. And of course, I'll put the website up here on the screen for those that are watching. It's manschoolshow.com. And definitely check Caleb's show out. And of course, you definitely want to follow what's happened over at the LA Podcast Festival. They'll probably have some episodes up there, and watch for what's going on there next year. And of course, Caleb's network that he belongs to is the sideshownetwork.tv. And Caleb, your Twitter is Caleb Eats Bacon. That's correct. Am I correct there?
That's right. Yep. And at Man School Show is the official Man School Twitter page.
So definitely check him out. Of course, you can check his personal webpage out too at CalebBaca.com. So I'm sure that that bacon, it's, you know, obviously Caleb eats bacon. How does Caleb eat himself?
It's a very meta question of you. You know, it's not about eating myself. It's about eating actual bacon. I don't cannibalize myself.
All right. Rob, any closing comments here?
No, it was great to have Caleb on. I think he brought some really good insight to what's going on in the space and the Los Angeles Podcast Fest, which I hope we see more of those type of events in the future. I'd love to be involved in creating one at some point myself.
Well, Rob, all you got to do is put yourself out there and go for it.
I know, exactly. I have been actually putting some feelers out, and I've got a potential team that could help build it. So,
because I don't think this is something you want to do by yourself. This thing is a huge undertaking.
I don't know. I mean, it is a big undertaking. Yeah, you're right. It is.
But Todd, I don't know if it's too late, but sure. Can I nominate a new podcast award category? And that's a podcaster with the best air, water, hydroponic powered garden.
As I have told every person that wants a new category with the podcast awards, I told him if you're willing to invest $400 a year for the next 3 years, we'd be happy to add a new category. So if you're willing to write me a check for $1,200 today, we'll add a aquaponics category for the podcast awards.
So you guys are voting
up
for me.
I think I'm going under a
starting
bridge here.
A podcast about aquaponics. Is that what you're advocating here? So I can be the only award winner in that category?
You're a podcaster with aquaponics, which is different from an aquaponics podcast.
And what's kind of funny is that show would probably be very successful because it's such a niche topic. It would probably do very, very well its own way.
Well, you know, I've seen a lot of people have a lot of questions about it. I actually, that was one of the reasons I went down to Tucson and Phoenix here a couple weeks ago. I went to the Aquaponics Association conference down there. And it was definitely an eye-opening experience to grow plants and fish in a climate like Tucson, right? So I went and I visited the university, a university down there that was actually creating an underground aquaponics system that could be done on Mars. So
whoa,
yeah.
Because we do know that the trip to Mars is one way. I think anyone.
That's right. I mean, you have to grow your own food and have all your own resources right there. Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for coming. And those of you, again, that are watching and listening, it's Todd at newmediashow.com or Rob at newmediashow.com. Give us some feedback. We'll be back with you next Saturday here at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern live. And definitely keep. We'll do a shout out next week about our new crowdfunding thing going on over at Tech Podcast. But again, don't forget the podcast award nominations close on the 15th. So if you're listening to the show on the 16th, you're too late. But guys, Caleb, thanks for coming out and sharing. And good luck.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys both do great work, and I really appreciate all the efforts you put into this space. And obviously, it's very much a labor of love.
Yeah.
And good luck with the show. Thanks so much. All right, everyone. Take care. We'll see you next time. Aloha.